There's a whole lot of good things happening on the Podcast One Forbes network. Forbes U30 is a show about young innovators, disruptors, and entrepreneurs like the minimalists Joshua and Ryan, electropop artists like Lights, CBS Search Party star Charles Rogers, the women of YouTube's Clever TV,
plus many more.
And the Forbes interview is a deep dive into the minds of the folks who could be on the cover of the magazine, like Tinder founder Sean Rad, hero pilot Captain Sully Sullenberg, Moneyball author Michael Lewis, pop star Jason Derulo,
and the list goes on and on.
Subscribe or listen to Forbes U30 and the Forbes interview now on the Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, or PodcastOne.com.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a church, but get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love what you do. Sloppy seconds. Dr. Spaz filling in for Dr. Drew over there.
Channeling Dr. Drew.
Channeling Dr. Drew.
Okay, I don't want to pick at anything, but recorded live? How else could it be recorded? Dead?
It's good stuff.
Recorded live. But played.
Where's your steno pad?
He's really picking up momentum as the week goes on.
You should write this. Yeah, you're starting to hit your groove.
How dare you.
All right. Last show, we were talking about Tarara Boumdie and Rumpelstiltskin and all the greats from our past. Do you have a kid? All you guys, you have the kid stuff. Like, let me tell you a story about a man named Jed. Took his Aunt Ellie and threw her on the bed. Pulled down a zipper and out came a worm. And out from the worm came a bubbling sperm.
I mean, we have those, but they're all, I've never heard any of yours.
6 months later, to Jed's surprise, Aunt Ellie's belly began to rise. Ellie just thought it was a bunch of blubber, but Uncle Jed forgot to use his rubber.
What you sang that to the twins. No, I haven't heard that. At what age?
I got that. I was definitely in grade school. It was definitely, you know, fifth grade, sixth grade.
Really?
Yeah, there was a motherfucking titty-sucking two-bald bitch one, too.
Oh, my God.
You guys remember that one? That one was pretty popular. It was just as much swearing as you could do. Let's see. I mean, everyone... Now, the thing that's weird is Batman and Robin laying an egg, Jingle Bells, Batman Smells, that has stood the test of time.
Yeah.
My kids know Jingle Bells, Batman Smells, probably because the franchise has been kept alive.
Yes.
But they don't know the Beverly Hillbillies.
No, thank God. I think it's you're raising them in a different environment than the Valley that you, when you grew up at that time, I mean, I think it was a little rough and tumble compared to their environment.
Well, I am thinking about the fact that they're going into the sixth grade. And when I was going into the sixth grade, it was like, hey, man, punch her in the pussy, dude. Oh. Like, it was like crazy stuff. Like, we knew all about sperm and pussy and condoms and all. It was all that crazy
stuff.
When
did you and Chris and Ray start? Like, I think that was a critical mass of, I don't want to say anything negative, but not the most positive.
Ray and I started in the fifth grade.
There you go.
And Chris, me and Ray started in the seventh grade because he went to another school. And then once we started in the seventh grade, that was about it.
Yeah. So that's when it hit a critical mass that sort of perpetuated these types of nursery rhymes with four-letter words.
We didn't have a lot of boundaries back then. We had no boundaries whatsoever.
But maybe that was a product of the drug-fueled 70s. The adults around you were often of marijuana fog or post-hippiedom. Because the Valley was just a rough-and-tumble place at that time.
It was. Let's see. Ray had a bunch of brothers. They all lived in an apartment. Ray's father's name Gunter. Mm. And he made like dental implants, but he did it in some sort of bootleg fashion or something. And I guess was asked to leave Germany or something. It's a bit of a grifter. Whatever he did, it wasn't quite on the up and up. That's what Gunter did. Nice enough guy. Him and Irene, his mom, just sat in the apartment and chain smoked, you know, with all the kids gathered around. Like, you just come walking in the apartment. You guys don't, You can't remember this experience, but walking into Ray's apartment just being overwhelmed by smoke.
I remember that, even with his father not there.
Yeah, and it wasn't even a big deal. It was just like, hey, both parents just sitting in the living room just smoking away. You know, it wasn't someone like open a window or turn on a fan. It's just that was Ray's wall-to-wall carpet, you know, bad rust-colored
German
shag,
chocolate cake.
And just smoking in there. And, you know, go into Ray's room, it still smelled like smoke. You know, it's smoke everywhere. Yeah. And that's just how they grew up. Chris's mom worked at a like book bindery place like downtown. Dad had a transmission shop, but it was a little on again, off again, and there was some drugs involved with his life, and eventually some arrests and some prison time. And then we have my mom, sort of welfare-y, food stampy, and my dad kind of works, but not making anything, and everyone was pretty hands off. Ray's mom was into it. She was into cooking, and she worked at the Far East Terrace, which is a Chinese place on like Kawanga or something, across from Universal. And it was just like a bar. It was just like a cocktail waitress. And none of this stuff seemed weird to me. Like, Ray's mom was, you know, 50 years old and worked as a cocktail waitress. Like, it all made sense to me. Like, I didn't look at her as a loser because I was using my mom as a yardstick in my family. And Ray's mom, you know, back then she was probably, you know, 40. But she
was kind. She'd listen to you. She was like Mother Teresa, maybe, compared to
the... No, she yelled at Ray all the time and had a thick German accent. But she would cook.
Right.
That was the thing. You'd come in, you know, come over. I'd sleep over, and on Saturday morning, she was making pancakes.
German pancakes.
No, she just made pancakes. But I always remember one of my favorite ones is Ray came in the kitchen, you know, 11 in the morning. And I was like, Ma, pancakes. And she's like, she'd say to him in her broken German accent, God damn it, Ray. I'm not running a goddamn restaurant here. This kitchen is closed. We're done making the pancakes. And I remember Ray, it was like a perfect Ray thing. It's like, you make your own pancakes. I'm done. I've been cooking all goddamn morning. And Ray just went, okay. And he reached across the table and he grabbed his younger brother, Rich's pile of pancakes, and he just slid it in front of him and he spit on it. And his brother Rich started squealing like, oh, and then mom got out the Bisquick again because now she had to make Rich the pancakes.
A good true Ray move.
That was something that's been ingrained in him for many, many years. But I never looked at what they did as, you know, first off, they lived in an apartment, which I lived in a house, but I lived in a dilapidated, broken down, you know, lawn up to here, you know, brown dirt, you know, just house disgusting, like everything was a mess. Mm-hmm. So I looked at their apartment, which had wall-to-wall carpet and like two bathrooms or something. It seemed to be
pretty good,
semi-decent. Like, yeah. Hey, the grounds look clean and safe and it looked nice. So I had this weird thing, which is you guys are on top of the world. You're living in this apartment. I got to live in this dump over here across from the school. It was a weird thing. Also, Ray's mom having a job as a cocktail waitress, this is a big deal back then. She would come home every night with cash because she got tips.
Ah.
So she always had a couple of singles and a couple of fives on her nightstand, and thus, whenever Ray said, give me $5 for lunch or give me $3 for lunch or whatever it is, she would always be able to peel them off because she just came home with a handful of cash. Whereas my mom did welfare and food stamps, and there were no ATMs. So there was never, like, you could go, the ice cream truck is coming. Could I have a quarter? And they'd go, we don't have a quarter.
Yeah.
We don't have that. Like, if you were just, maybe they had a quarter. I don't know. I imagine they had $4 and hid it somewhere. But, like, you couldn't go, give me $5. They'd go, we don't have $5 because we don't have an ATM. We don't have a bank account. We don't have credit cards. And we just get welfare. So there's no money.
So Ray's mother would gladly hand you guys the cash out.
Yeah, she was a nice woman. She liked me. She looked out for Ray. And she came home with, you know, $27 in cash every night, or $18 or whatever it was back then, but she physically had it, you know. And then also, I think when you do that for a living and it comes a little easier, it's a little easier to hand it out. When you're getting welfare checks, it's hard to hand out wads of cash. My dad, you know, worked, but got paid in a paycheck and like direct deposit or something. He never had, seemed to have any cash. And they're both exquisitely cheap and stupid. So they never had anything. But I thought, you know, Ray had a good. Now, what Ray did is Ray would get $5 a day for lunch or $4 a day for lunch or whatever it is because she had cash. Hmm. Ray wouldn't spend that money. Ray would go to North Hollywood High and talk people out of their coffee breakfast sandwiches and stuff and knew somebody at the Snack Shack or whatever, would strong arm people and pocket. Ray would pocket the money his mom would give him for lunch. And at the end of the school year, the guy had like $900 or something because it was like...
Then what would he do with it?
Ray started off life like doing paper routes and pocketing mom's tip money and stuff like that. And ended up at the end of high school, had like $2,500 in the bank when we didn't... No one else even had a bank account. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
And?
I don't know what happened after that.
No bank account.
I think he just bought cigarettes with the money. But the, Chris's dad ended up going to jail, and Chris's mom just worked a million years at the bookbindery place. Which, again, I didn't. You know, when you're young, it is either you have a job or you don't have a job. You don't really think of what kind of job.
Yeah,
it's a weird school, bad vocational thing where it's like would you like to be a nurse? A fireman, a doctor, an attorney. It's like, hold on. Can we just show a picture of the car those people would drive, and then I'll base it on that? Because would you like to work at a bakery? Like, these are wildly different, but we're treating them. We're so stupid that we go, you want to work at a bakery, or would you like to be a physician? Like, okay, these are what somebody should talk about. These aren't all the same job. They never do that. Show the fucking picture of the car the guy at the bakery drives. Or the guy the physician drives, and it's going to help influence me.
Do you know when you ask your kids what their friend's parents do? Do you ever ask that? My kids never know. It's, oh, I don't know. And I
know that when you ask a girl about her father, if there's anything to do with the military, they're always like, he did something with an airplane or something. And then you talk to the guy, and he flew F-18s off a carrier. Like, you know. But they always downgrade because they don't know did. But, yeah, Chris's dad went to jail. Yeah. Anyway.
So what about when were you a proverbial storyteller? Did you have a good memory for these kind of nursery rhymes? Because I don't recall Ray being able to recount the type of memories. You seem to have the verbal. You hear something, you can play it back even from quite a while ago.
I had an interest in anything audible that was entertaining. I would listen to Dr. Demento's mm-hmm. radio show. I loved any goofy, spoofy, funny thing. If you took a song and wrote parody lyrics to it, that was fun. You know, anything that was funny and sort of audible. I didn't read. I wasn't into the visual stuff that much. I couldn't make a movie or film any or have a camera. Or, you know, we didn't have any equipment or anything like that. But you could repeat. I guess it was this sort of free entertainment for me, being able to make up things and repeat things and say songs. It was free. You know, the other stuff involved a Super 8 camera or something or some recording devices or stuff that was non-existent. You know, so we didn't have, so for me, it was just super poor, but like to entertain myself with the funny stories and limericks and
whatever. So did you get yourself beat up at times by,
I never really got beat up per se.
So you're not getting back at Ray for anything he did to you back in the day?
maybe, but I got bullied by my friends. But that was just us being bullies to each other.
Right.
You know,
right.
I was very physically gifted. So I wasn't big and strong. I was just gifted. Right. So I wasn't going to there wasn't going to be any like neighborhood bullies just going to come over and whoop on me or anything like that. It just it couldn't happen. There was nobody at that age I couldn't just throw to the ground. Like if you came at me, you're on your back. I wasn't punching you. I had instinct for judo. I knew how to do judos and throws and stuff like that without anything. I'd get you in a headlock and you'd be on your back and I'd throw in your back. Like I'd do that to anybody at any time. The problem was, is Ray weighed 30 pounds more than me because he was huge and he was back a grade. Oh. So I couldn't just take him and throw him on the ground. He was like a huge size disadvantage, you know. So, but then Ray and Chris, you know, they turned out to be physical specimens.
Yeah.
And then they would attempt to bully me. But not bully. We call it bully. We're just going at it. It's whatever we do to each other. And that's whatever. There were no boundaries.
No. Compare that to what your kids experience at school, especially in your...
I am dumbfounded when I walk in, and I did the other day. I just walked into the living room, and there was Sonny and his buddy Jensen, and they're just watching TV. And they're like, one's 11, the other's about to turn 11. I'm like, why aren't you guys wrestling?
Yeah.
And they're like, why? And I'm like, shouldn't I be yelling, take it outside? And they're like, we're watching TV. And I'm like, don't you want to get each other in a headlock, like, ever? No, why would we? Like, my entire age 7 to 23 was loosely based about headlocks. It was all about getting somebody in a headlock. Who could get who in a headlock? It's just headlock, pinned, thrown. My buddy Tom had a diving board. It extended about 6 feet out over the pool, and all we did was stand on it and wrestle the entire night. You got thrown in the pool, next guy up. He got thrown you in the pool, next guy up. That's it. Just a battle. And a battle with elbows and knees and just anything that could be anything. That's all we ever did.
I think there's a higher tolerance back then. I think now you start pulling that kind of stuff at school, and it's just like you're going to get called. Parents get called in, and it's...
Physical. No, they can't. All it was physical 100% all the time.
Yeah. Sonny, now, so I can't see you. I've talked to Sonny. He says, well, father thinks.
Father? No, he doesn't. They're way too nice.
Yeah.
Everyone respects the shit out of each other, and they don't even get it. But I don't get – see, I thought it was innate. I just thought you take a little – boys, and they become like little rams. They just ram each other. You know, like that's all little guys do. Just get physical.
Yeah. But I think I've noticed kids have intellectual skills, and they have ability to read adults, because I know Sonny will cheat at horse when I play basketball with him, and I would never have thought of pulling that on another kid's parents.
Although
maybe I'm not the proverbial respected adult.
We would – like if you told Ray, hey, this is a new T-shirt, man. Take it easy.
Oh,
he would tear it off you like the Hulk.
But he'd still do that.
Maybe. He remember one time I didn't have any good sporting equipment, but I did find a really good magnesium baseball bat in the ivy. I found it ditched in the ivy. I spent a lot of time looking for stuff in the ivy, and I found a good baseball bat. Like one I would, you know, was $30 or something. I would never afford. My parents never bought any sporting equipment or anything of that kind, which is stupid because all I want to do is play sports, and they could have made it easier by just buying a couple of balls. I'd go outside and never come back again. But they figured we can do it. He'll go out, never come back, and we can still not buy any balls. And it's true. They turned out to be right. But Ray got this bat, and I remember – this is one of the things I have pointed out to him as an adult. He just got it, and he just kept throwing it as high as he could in the air and let it land on the asphalt. And he just kept throwing it as high as he could in the air, and eventually it just cracked like along the seam. And it was like, okay, well, I guess we got to throw it away. And it was like my prize's possession. Like, I don't even know to this day why that's how he would do things. I wasn't even mad at him. I was just like, I found this bat. It's worth more than anything I own. Ray got hold of it and just threw it in the air. He must have done it 20 times. It took a long time for it to eventually, it was a titanium bat or something, magnesium or something, to crack all along the top. And I was like, all right, well, now it's no good. And it was like, yep, no good.
Yeah.
Well, moving on.
Ray took me, threw me on the ground when we were playing basketball at your house in the old days. Remember that? And I was on his team. He just didn't like... Drinking beer and smoking cigarettes while he was playing. Probably didn't help his brain functioning better.
Did he break your arm?
Yeah, I broke my wrist. And then I was wearing a – and then afterwards he goes, nah, you didn't break that. That's not broken. You're full of crap.
Yeah.
Typical Ray.
Chris would do the same stuff, but not that. Not the bat. Not the bat stuff. I miss that, Ben. All right. Let's see. Let's take a question here. Let's go to David, 34, San Antonio.
Ace man.
What's going on,
man? Long time, first time. Hey, real quick, pretty successful dude, medevac pilot, and building my own house as we speak.
Winner.
But my question is, how much drinking is too much? Because I pretty much go home and drink a couple stiff drinks every single night. And you know, Dr. Bruce's perspective as opposed to Dr. Drew's, what am I doing damage to my body and that type of stuff, you know?
Well, what's a couple of stiff drinks? Is it, you know, in terms of a pint, how long does a fifth of vodka or whatever you stiff drink last you?
Oh, you know, a fifth. I don't know.
Okay.
Probably drink two or three drinks of vodka, you know, on the rocks each night. Not every single night. I don't need it, you know what I mean? But, you know, I go through it pretty quick.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
I get it.
First of all, you're a pilot, right?
Right.
Okay, so that's when it's – because pilots, it's like physicians or people that have safety-sensitive positions. You get into the – how long – what is it, 12 hours between the bottle and the throttle? You have those issues.
Yeah, and if I'm flying, of course, I'll never
Right. But there's more concern that if – so with – what is alcoholism? What is addiction? It's first of all, you look at your family history. You have any family history, first of all, psychiatric disorders, but especially addictions, alcoholism. And then look at progression and consequence. Are you drinking more? Are you needing to drink more? When you drink on a daily basis, your liver does build up enzymes. It metabolizes faster. So tolerance, are you drinking to get a buzz? Are you needing to drink more? Are you having any kind of consequences in terms of sleep or physical issues? You're 34. So at this age, generally, if you do have a problem, it isn't that apparent in your work or otherwise. But it's really progression. Why would you question, though? Because most of the time when people have a question, then there's something going on that's concerning them either.
I think he feels like it's collecting some momentum. And what I would say, David, is kind of what I say to everybody, and I do it in my own life too, which is you go, okay, let's set a couple of ground rules and see if we can adhere to these ground rules. You know, like, okay, no drinking before 9 p.m. or something like that. You know, like I'm not going to be pouring myself a drink at 5:30 in the evening or afternoon or whatever it's called. So like none of that. No drinking, you know, this bottle should last 3 or 4 nights or whatever X amount of nights. Now, I'm not doing half and half or whatever. You set these, like, it's sort of like, I like drinking a beer around the house, but only on a weekend, you know, Memorial Day or something. I would never have a beer on a Tuesday around the house.
Yeah, I don't day drink ever.
Well, you're better than I am. But what I'm saying is hey, if we're hanging out by the pool all Saturday, I'm cracking a beer. But I'm not cracking a beer at 1 in the afternoon on a Wednesday, like you and flying, you know, on nights or before you fly, one or no cocktails or whatever, you know, these types of rules. And then my thing is if you can adhere to these rules, then at least it's not progressing and it's in some form of, it's contained by some degree. It's not that you're not drinking. It's that you don't do this and you don't do that. But if you start finding yourself bending or breaking these rules, then you are going down a path where you're not able to prevent yourself from doing this. And now it's starting to lead into what we'd call a problem.
Right. So, as a physician, sometimes you'll tell a patient, say, well, I don't have to drink every day. I'll say, well, just have one drink a day. And people that have a problem frequently, they can't stop. Once they get that feeling, then there's loss of control. But do you have any negative consequences or tolerance or family histories or something that's concerning you specifically?
Well, you know, I think my biological grandfather was an alcoholic, of course, but, you know, I never met the guy. But, I'd never keep my career going with a DUI or anything like that. I can put it down. You know, I'm telling you. But
and drinking alone's not a great thing. I mean, that's also.
You know,
sometimes...
I got a wonderful girlfriend who I'm with every single night. Who's okay. a you know eye doctor and everything. You know, she's great. So, you know, I don't really think I see the consequences. No, I'm maybe able to perform at work. Like I said, building a house in my spare time. You know.
Yeah. So. Well, look. So. Two things. You called for a reason.
Yeah. Two or three stiff drinks a night, not a great idea. And it sounds like you're at the point where you don't have any consequences, but there's something about your drinking patterns.
There's part of you that feels like you're progressing, that you're moving some direction that you don't want to move toward. And so what I would say to you is let's retard versus advance. And we're not saying go cold turkey.
Put the Corolla limits on it. I think he made an excellent point with that, and see how that goes. Reverse, put it in reverse and see how you do.
And see how those limits go, and then, you know, talk to us in 6 months and see how those limits felt. Go ahead, Bruce.
Okay, well, stamps.com, Adam, is something that is extremely useful in my business and yours. Stamps.com, we use it at Corolla Digital for everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's buying and printing official U.S. postage for any letter, package, or class of mail with your computer and printer. I am a retard when it comes to any kind of technology, but this I've been able to accomplish. They'll send you a digital scale that you can use to automatically calculate exact postage. That was easy to do. And you can also enjoy Stamps.com with a 4-week trial plus postage and the digital scale without long-term commitment.
So. I like that.
Yes. And you can go to stamps.com, STAMPS.com, and you click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in ADS.
ADS, stamps.com.
Enter ADS. Stamps.com, and you never have to go to the post office again. And it's like going to the DMV for me. I'd rather save me a lot of grief.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, post office, DMV. Oh. That's a bad,
waiting
a bad
in line.
Weekday. No, I'm done with that. I say feh to that. But I do have a lot of love for Blinds Galore. Blinds Galore, they do everything, and they do it better than anyone. That sounds pretty sweeping, but I stand by. They create 100% custom window treatments built to your exact measurements down to the very smallest, minute details. Don't bother dragging yourself outside to buy the old big box prepackaged shades. No, man. You don't need that. Blinds Galore makes it easy to get custom products for your windows, and you do it right from your own home. They've covered over 2 million windows, and probably about 40 of them have been mine. My house, bedroom, bathroom, Lynette's room, let's see, office, edit bay, studios, all at Blinds Galore, blindsgalore.com. They can help you. They do custom work. They're good people. They're into their business big time. And again, pick the colors. I go with white for everything because it reflects the heat, but yep. I went with some blue for the new shop that I'm building out over there, and they love it. So check out blindsgalore.com. Let them know I sent you. That is blindsgalore.com. They're good people. They came by, they checked out the race cars and everything last week. Blinds Galore, and let them know Adam sent you, and I defy you to not be over the moon about Blinds Galore. All right, improv tonight in Irvine with Dennis Prager. Might be a couple tickets left. Come check that out. Levity Live, Oxnard, Thursday, July 6th. David Koechner and Rainn Wilson up on stage. Just a couple of good gets out there in Oxnard. The movie, 24-Hour War, and, of course, No Safe Spaces, nosafespaces.com. Me and Dennis Prager, go join the revolution and check that out. Just go to adamcarolla.com and see what's going on. Bruce, what do you got?
Weekly Infusion with Dr. Drew, our new podcast, getting better every week.
So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Dr. Spaz saying mahalo.
The Corolla Drink Seattle Bar Crawl is sold out. But don't worry, you can still party with us at the Showbox Soto Lounge. Saturday, June 24th, Lynette Corolla, Ray Oldhofer, Jay Miller, Gary, Kalen, Dylan, Nick, Dawson, plus Loxy. And I'll pick up all your pieces, but I can't help you go follow your woman through the way they end. at the Showbox Soto Lounge. Plus, special guest, Moon Darling. Tickets and more information at CorollaDrinks.com. Get your tickets now for Loxie and Moon Darling at the world-famous Showbox Soto Lounge, Saturday, June 24th at CorollaDrinks.com.